The plunge is always scary, but taking it always pays off. So without succumbing to fear, let's dive in. All right.
We're back.
In the beautiful home studio with the sun shining in.
Not quite.
Not quite, but better than last time the sun was shining in, like, intrusively.
Last time the sun was shining in.
This is the way I'd prefer it. All right, so I'll just jump into what I had. So all week I had this project that was weighing on me, so it sounds like you also probably had that.
Yeah.
So I have a speech I'm giving, and I have something somewhere, but, like, I can't access it. And I probably just need to sit down and start writing, but I'm not feeling like I could write, and I don't know. So I'm like, oh my God, do I need to just, like, drink tons of caffeine and write it? What should I do? And I've been having, like, a sober-ish, whatever month we're in, since returning back from the trip. So, I don't want to have to do that, but I don't know what to do. I went to the studio that night and I played music, fine, nothing. And then I chose not to still be sober, fine. I went to sleep that night. And that night, a dream comes to me. And in the dream, it's the morning of giving the speech, but in a completely different place in Israel, in this big shul. And I'm in the shul and I have no speech prepared. So I'm like, oh my God. And it was like something with the bar mitzvah, but I don't know. So I'm like, oh my God, I have nothing to say. So you're there. So I start running through my ideas with you. So I'm like, okay, so I'll start with this and then I'll go to this. And you were very critical. You're like, no, that's terrible, which I don't think you would be the morning of, but it was more helpful that you were, you know? So like, no, that's whatever. So I'm working through it. And I'm about to get ready to give the speech. Now, I probably should have continued with the dream and given the speech now that I was ready.
Because then you'd have a speech.
But I was getting a little winded. I don't know if I was for sure going to be successful, even in the dream. So I got up, I ran into the office, and I just wrote the whole thing in like 30 minutes because it was basically done. I did it in my sleep.
That's crazy. Yeah, so that's the argument for lucid dreaming.
Yeah.
At what point in the dream did you realize you were dreaming?
I didn't. Oh. I think that's why I didn't give the speech. Fine.
Like,
that's
I woke up. You just woke up and you're like, oh, I have to go write this down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was completely lucid, but it was obviously very useful.
Yeah. So if it is lucid, then you could always just control what you dream about. So any problem you have that you hit a wall on, just, all right, I'll sleep on it.
Exactly. And I created an ideal circumstance because it was due.
Yeah, so that was no option.
Yeah. And it's funny that was the circumstance under which I could write. I couldn't do it. It had to be that morning.
Yeah. We've been trained for that in all of school.
Exactly. Trained to only respond to deadlines.
Yeah. Do you think the speech came out better because you wrote it in a different state? Like, is it special because you had extra creativity or something?
Yeah, it was like I wasn't able to write it in my sober reality, and then in my dream was the option.
Yeah. So I can't use substances.
So I started having lucid dreams.
I'll dream. All right, that's not a bad alternative.
I have heard that from people that, are really addicted and then they quit. They say they have crazy dreams.
Well, Rogan said that when his friends did Sober October. He said right when he stopped smoking, he was having crazy dreams, and all of his friends were also. Mm-hmm. But the explanation, I mean, it's kind of scary. He just said that marijuana, what was it? Limits your REM cycle length. So like you're not getting sufficient sleep. So when you stop having it, you just get deeper sleeps or something to make up for it. Maybe that's actually pretty concerning though. Like, who wants to smoke if that's what it does?
Yeah, I don't know. I think my is more exciting. Like, you're inducing the dream, so you don't get that. You don't need to have the dream anymore. You're living dreams.
Yeah.
And now you get them in real dreams. I don't know, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, still, that, like, okay, so could you have just waited until shul and came up with a speech on the spot?
No, because it's going to be better now. I'm going to get to rehearse it. And
yeah, now you get to rehearse it.
Yeah, and the words are going to be better. It just made it, like, accelerated the timeline.
Yeah, so you get to work on it twice with the deadline coming up.
Exactly. The first, that, like, what you were saying with your paper, like, yeah, proofread, yeah, you wish you that you created an artificial deadline that's a day before the deadline.
Yeah, and truthfully, I did this last time with my paper, pounded it out the day it was due. And I said, all right, next paper, I'm going to start earlier, and I'll have an extra day.
Right.
But I just couldn't write it. I kept procrastinating again until the 2 days before, really. I pounded it out both days.
Right. So you needed the deadline.
I need the deadline. Yeah. Not always.
Mostly.
If the work is less daunting, then it's easier to jump in or to do piece by piece or get started on it. But when it's a project that's, like, overwhelmingly large, to start even on a small piece of it is like to accept this huge thing. Like, all right, now I'm working on it. And I think that's uncomfortable.
Right.
Like, you could have started writing your speech, but you didn't even want to start because you knew you weren't ready to finish it.
Right. Yeah, so if it's like a more, what if it's, or if it's pleasant, yeah, and the more anxiety associated with it, the harder it is to, whatever.
To dive in, yeah.
Yeah. So, but then at peak anxiety, it's weird. Anxiety is both like a motivator and a demotivator from doing it.
Yeah, I think at peak anxiety, you then just say, all right, I have to do this now, and you put the anxiety aside, and that's when you start being productive.
The anxiety, so like, isn't the anxiety trying to tell you to do it?
Yeah, though? So you reach peak anxiety and you say, okay, at this point, I can't just have this anxiety with me. So I'm going to dive in. And the moment you dive in, the anxiety leaves you and now you're working on the project.
Right.
So you're not actually being most productive when you have all that anxiety, because as you start working on it, you don't feel the anxiety anymore.
No, but the anxiety is designed to
motivate you
to start. Yeah. But in some ways, it makes it harder to start.
Yeah. Yeah, you think that's a glitch?
That doesn't seem like doesn't that should be intended. Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
No, or the anxiety has served two functions. When there's great enough anxiety, life-threatening situation, you need to react. But sometimes anxiety is also used as like sort of a fear. You know, all right, yeah, that you're anxious about doing that thing. That's because you shouldn't. Let's say you want to go do something dangerous, like you're going to go climb a tree for.
Right, but this is not that.
Okay, but maybe they were controlled by the same system, and that's why you ended up with this. Yeah, well, it's
right.
You don't always end up with perfect systems,
right? So you have this anxiety about doing it, which is designed to get you to do it, but your brain's mixing it up with a
anxiety over something dangerous that you don't want to do. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds likely, honestly, but it's really a major glitch then.
Yeah, yeah, it is a major glitch. But everything about the way we live today is not how our brains, you know, it's not what they were selected for.
Right, so we could find all kinds of glitches.
They were living in natural environments. When did they have something like a paper to write?
Right.
Like it was all.
Yeah, but they had something they were supposed to do that the anxiety that tried they would push to off to do.
I mean, food is an immediate need. Staying warm is an immediate need.
No, but they had to go till the ground. You know,
that wasn't stuff. That's not what our brain was selected for.
I'm saying
that's already here. Domestication of that was when we domesticated agriculture.
Right. So when things were more immediate. No, but you had things that you had to do. You had to go approach the female mate. Or you're going to have to fight the main guy. But you weren't going to fight him right away. You had part of you that said, there's anxiety. If I don't fight him, I'm in trouble because I'm not going to be able to procreate or whatever.
Yeah.
And then anxiety about, but those.
But if I do fight him, I might die.
Yeah.
So, and so the threat needs to be so great, like you need a big enough motivator to get you to fight him.
So like this paper, if I don't write it, I'm gonna die. But writing it is dangerous, your brain thinks, because yeah. Why else would I be anxious about doing it? It must be a terribly dangerous thing to do.
So I'm not going to write it unless I actually need to write it. And then the deadline comes up and you realize, oh, shoot, I actually need to write this paper. I need to fight the alpha male because he's going to kill me and my, and you know, right. my,
but or it's take a huge away my wife. Glitch in that you're thinking that it's dangerous to write the paper.
Yeah, it's not dangerous at all. Well, you don't think it's dangerous necessarily, but you think it's uncomfortable, or just it's not something you want to do.
But it's not really uncomfortable. It's only uncomfortable because of the anxiety.
Yeah.
So that's it's a huge malfunction.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we could think of so many ways in which we could optimize our system, our brain.
Right.
So I don't know. Like, there are tons of malfunctions.
Right.
Ways we think that are just irrational or...
Right, but it's still perfect. Like, there was no way to get you here.
Yeah, it got you here.
There was no way to get you here that would be better. So that's interesting.
No, not necessarily. I mean, yes, there was no way to get you here other than the way that got you here.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that if someone could manually go and change one of the genes in add a mutation 1,000 years ago, that wouldn't be a superior species.
Right. If it can make you fly.
Yeah. It was just through the process
through what's possible, what's realistic, what's statistically likely. But why, it's weird that those systems should get crossed then. Like, what is it about our genetics that are so limited that they would create two systems that were trying to do similar things that would start getting interfering with one another?
I think it's a lot about our brain. Our brain is like this one big mesh, and it does a lot of systems that we think of as independent, but they're really very dependent on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they overlap with each other. And so you have one tool that's good for something else, and it's very easy to adapt it into another, you know, a tool for another need.
Mm. Right. So now you have something, so you might as well use it. That system's developed. So now it layers it on top. And if there's conflict.
You have anxiety for whatever purpose it developed, or fear, or whatever anxiety boils down to. But now it's there in your brain for everything to access. Right? Like it's just a part of your brain. And suddenly other things start getting routed into
anxiety. And we're saying that originally it made sense to pair them because anything that was causing you anxiety about doing was something that was dangerous.
Yeah.
But also that you had to do. Yeah, because otherwise why would you care? So it was dangerous, you're not going to do it. It's a conflict. What is anxiety? A conflict between something that you're supposed to do or that you have a drive towards doing, but that... might have a negative repercussion. Yeah. So it's this conflict point where these two waves are moving in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know. I can't. So think of it in the paper example. You're supposed to write the paper.
But you don't want to write the paper for whatever reason you think it's uncomfortable to do. It's just not something.
But we're saying that I'm saying that the thing that I think is driving the other way is that anxiety itself makes it less likely for you to do it.
Okay, but that's the purpose of anxiety, to prevent you from doing it.
But also to make you do it.
Yeah, both.
To prevent you from not doing it and to prevent you... Right, it's not doing it, the anxiety. It wants to make sure that you don't do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it could...
Make sure not to not write your paper.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
In a way, but it's also there to make sure you don't do something stupid.
Which writing your paper must be, because why else would you be anxious about doing it?
Yeah, maybe. Yes, yeah, so you become anxious to not write your paper.
You become, right, because that's a legitimate fear. So why are you anxious to write it, though?
Your brain doesn't want to dedicate resources to it. There's the smallest thing that's saying, don't write it yet. right? Not the anxiety necessarily, but there's something else that tells you don't write it.
Preserve. It's a long project. Preservation of energy of some sort.
And maybe we would steamroll right past that right away. But instead, we then get this anxiety. And the anxiety's purpose is really to help us get to do it if it's important enough to do. But once we feel the anxiety, then we don't want to even approach the paper because it's surrounded by anxiety. So the
anxiety was counterproductive. It's like a parent that keeps yelling at a kid to do something and makes him less likely.
Exactly.
It's messed up. Well, I guess that's why the parent does it, because their anxiety system's also messed up.
Yeah.
So there's major glitches in our system.
Yeah. Well, that's speculative, by the way, just in case. Yeah, we're not no evolutionary psychologists.
Evolutionary psychology sounds fascinating.
It is so fascinating, but it's very dangerous to speculate on. Very easy to be wrong.
Yeah.
And we know very little about the topic.
We're most likely wrong.
But it is fascinating. It's one of my favorite subjects.
So this overlaps with something that I was thinking also. So I'm basically going to speak about slavery and how, you know, we're still slaves to some extent, you know, and what I basically was saying is, in the past, every country needs to get their people to work. It's essential. So in the past, if you can make them slaves, then that's a suitable way, you know, and then they'll be forced to work. So our country has found a more creative way to enslave us through sales, basically, you know, selling you to consume something. And then once you consume, you have to work to sustain it. So it's like this, so it's similar to what you were saying, that the sales is
trick us into doing it rather than force us into doing it. And we'll do a better job. We'll come at it with our full energy, our creativity.
From us, for us, exactly. And that's basically what they're doing now. So we're not slaves. We're not forced to do it only because that's inefficient, enslaving us. We wouldn't really give the work much passion at all.
Yeah. We're evolving.
Yeah.
Our social structure is evolving.
A higher level of slavery. And in my speech, the antidote to it is basically a premise-destroying sense of purpose. So if, like what we've been discussing, if you're marching towards the goal blindly, then you're enslaved by the goal. But if you have a different goal, then you can't be enslaved by the goal because you're moving in a different direction. So it doesn't matter which. So if you have God who you're trying to move in that direction, you have these commandments that you're doing, you can't be enslaved by any other human because you don't care about the structure that they set up. So like our forefathers come to, or whatever, our grandparents come to this country, they want them to work on Saturday. Which is basically slavery. They say, no, we can't work on Saturday. You have to work on Saturday. Normal people, if you threaten their career, they would be enslaved. They would have to work on Saturday.
Yeah,
but our ancestors said, sorry, we can't.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't be enslaved. And then the craziest part is they ended up not being able to work for anyone else. They had to make their own companies, which is like already a step away from slavery.
Yeah, it's funny. I told you I was listening to Eric Weinstein's Faith and Reason with Sam Harris, old episode, and Eric was making a similar point where people who have faith will do things that no one would do otherwise, you know, with a rational thought process, and yet we often see that it leads to good results. So he was just saying that we need to have some space for faith.
Right, which is, we've been discussing that a lot.
And he was saying, I think this particular analogy is pretty interesting. He said, Sam Harris's mind is a house built of glass walls. Every room sees directly into all the other rooms, and so it's one big room, really. But he's saying, you know, and we need to have the structure where we could compartmentalize things. And so you could have, you know, one room in your mind that's for hyper-rational thought, which is you're going to call on for some things, and a room in your mind for faith, which you're going to need to go to sometimes when you're feeling depressed or whatever, and build these little compartments. And they could call on each other, but they're also separate, isolated places that you could go.
Right. I mentioned that about myself, I think, in one of the earlier episodes, that one of the first things I realized when I started to become more mindful is that my skepticism would invade all the rooms of the house. And like, there were illusions that were designed to protect my, I guess, my ego or whatever it was that I wasn't allowing to stand. They were getting knocked down. But like, normal people like are able to keep those walls, and those walls are critical for them, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least for the preservation of their ego, which is useful in certain ways that I was losing because I wasn't able to, you know, because my walls, I guess, glass wall kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting.
Like, normal people don't ask, like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they use their skepticism. It's not like they have no skepticism. If you tell them some ridiculous lie, they're going to call you out on it, but they keep that skepticism contained somehow. They only use it for the purpose it was created for, evolutionarily, which was, all right, detecting lies or obvious falsehoods, but not to question, you know, their sense of self or reality, which that sense of self and understanding of reality was also created for a purpose. It wasn't meant to be burnt down.
Yeah, so I'm experiencing a destabilizing, for sure, force from my meditation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's good or if it's not good.
Yeah.
But, like, for sure. Because there's some questions that maybe were designed to not be asked, that if you ask them, you know, like, where are you going to end up? You know, mm-hmm. How many, so I don't know.
The people who advocate for meditation, it's not like you're not supposed to have these questions. The whole specific purpose is to have those questions.
Correct. Yeah. So there's some people that are saying it's okay to do it, but it's just...
And it seems that they get over the hump and they embrace it and they love it. Now they're egoless or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm for sure having that kind of... Because same thing, if you're basically ripping at all the premises of everything, and
yeah,
there's just a cliff of nothingness. I was watching a Game of Thrones, and he keeps asking Arya if she's willing to be nobody. And she's like, you're not ready to be nobody.
Yeah.
You know, like, are you ready to surrender all your thoughts, all your... And it's like, no. That's yeah. A terrifying...
Yeah. But it's not about being ready or not. Sam Harris will tell you, you are nobody.
Right, but you have to be... Right. Is she ready to... Maybe that's all it is. All it takes is to be ready.
All it takes is to realize it.
Yeah. But that's a frightening thing. I walk so slowly. I'm walking around the block. I can't even believe that going to Ocean Parkway is like a massive journey.
Is this because of meditation? How is it related?
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Why? Because you're being more mindful of your walking, or just you see no reason to rush?
I see no reason to rush.
That's great.
I'm walking like at this. Yeah, but I see no reason to move in any direction.
Well, why are you walking?
It's pleasant. It brings me pleasant sensations. I get to see some trees. Right. But, like, I'm, like, really... Sometimes, like, one block, I'm like, oh, my God, how am I going to get home? I'm really far away from home.
That's a little extreme.
I was sitting on the bench on Ocean Parkway today, and it started to get windy. And, like, I was like, oh, boy. I don't know how I'm going to make it back in time to beat the storm. But then I realized that I have a second gear if I want to access it, and I was able to walk fast to home.
How heroic.
Yes, I think it's related. I don't know. It
could be related. It could also be part of sober April.
That one, now I don't walk.
Withdrawal, lethargy. I mean, not that you were having any substance regularly, but...
I don't think it's that. I would think it's already been, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, so Weinstein saying, though, that you want to leave some, you don't want everything to be transparent, though, which is what meditation is trying to accomplish, I think, that all the chambers are opening.
No, well, you might want to have the ability to open the chambers. You also want to have the ability to keep them down.
Right. But they're just, it's just lies are the only things that you could build at that point once you recognize that there are no real walls.
I think if you drill him on it, eventually he'll say that, like, obviously he is coming from somewhere. Like, there's some system superior to the walls of the house. But he'll just say it's useful to have those rooms that you could step into temporarily.
If he's has the same assumption that he's trying to maximize well-being.
Yeah, I'd think so. Or at least his own well-being.
Right.
Right.
But it comes down to the lying thing also, I guess, with Sam, that he thinks that the lies are... that any lie is poison, where those walls are lies, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, so...
That once you break everything down...
Yeah, so... Eric might then disagree on that, right? So if there's a lie that he think... I mean, Sam would have to agree on that also if you gave him the hypothetical. Like, if there's a lie that's beneficial to us to believe, really beneficial, Sam would agree then, okay.
But he's going to say the process of believing the lie or whatever is so damaging that...
No, but okay, I'm giving you a hypothetical. Yeah, so maybe...
That you Eric, can't name a lie that would be... Yeah.
So maybe Eric believes lies are less harmful.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't really view them as lies, right? They are true in some way. There's a truth to them. It's a more Peterson view on truth.
Right. Like, Sam views lack of transparency as a lie.
Yeah.
If everything is not completely dissolved, then it's a lie.
Yeah. So maybe that's a little extreme.
Yeah, it seems like it would be extreme. So, yeah, it's definitely been interesting, but I'm definitely noticing that just like... Right, so I guess that's the difference. Like, Judaism has you marching in a certain direction, which it might be a lie, but that marching in that direction is the thing alone that's useful, whereas this might have you marching in no direction. Both are to acknowledge that the direction that you're being pulled in inherently is not the right direction to be pulled in, is a form of slavery or whatever, but one is suggesting an alternative direction that you should march in, and the other one's suggesting that no marching.
No marching. Stay on the bench on it.
Yeah, exactly. And wither away. That's what we keep thinking. Yeah. I don't know.
Sit and wither away.
Yeah, I don't see how it could where the pull will ever happen.
Yeah, as Sam was talking about some, he's doing an event with the his favorite meditation teacher that he's ever learned with.
Yeah,
studied with his son. Yeah, you heard that?
Who was talented? He said, which I thought was weird.
But then did you hear the story?
Maybe.
So. He was teaching, and he had like four monasteries where he was teaching meditation. And then one day he just like disappeared. He was gone.
Oh yeah. For 5 years. He spent wandering,
living in the streets, and he got fatally ill.
Yeah. This was me all week.
So maybe he was really talented. He realized that he should just sit and wither away.
He did.
But then he wrote a book about it or something. He's doing something now, so.
He must have changed.
He changed.
Yeah, I thought that also. He's writing the book. I was like, that seems weird.
Yeah.
Who convinced him to write that book? What motivation could have convinced him?
Maybe he thinks he has something to teach. He almost died. He was sick.
To spread joy.
Because of his travels. And maybe he realized he wasn't spreading joy as a homeless whatever person or...
Yeah, but we don't know where his motivation to spread joy came from.
Yeah.
So another thing that I was thinking about is hitting rock bottom or experiencing negative emotions. And I don't know, did we talk about this before? You could become so adept at avoiding the negative emotions that you don't like. Like, let's say every time you felt negative emotion, you would do Wim Hof or I don't know, whatever techniques you've learned to get rid of them. But there was a purpose to you experiencing them. So, I don't know.
Like,
maybe you only hit joy when you dissolve. That's what their claim is. And you're afraid to dissolve, just like you're afraid to have the negative emotions that you really need.
Yeah. I told you Ferris spoke about the first part of the idea.
I forgot.
Like, he says he became very adept at changing his mood by listening to upbeat music, but he has to start listening to more minor key music to let himself feel those feelings.
I mean, he's like manipulating the process. So, so that's the other
question. Why can't you let yourself have the feelings are there, they're sitting in there, and you're going to let them out eventually, but to let them out on your own terms. That's fine.
Right. Also, to accelerate the... because then it's all very manipulative. Well, so then that comes down to like a Pinker kind of question about like how much do you trust what naturally happens? Like if you believe that there's a purpose to all of it, like you're, the experiences that you're getting are the ones that you need kind of thing.
I don't have any trust in the natural system.
No trust in the natural system, but the reason that you're getting, you believe that you should feel any of the negative is because the natural system's giving it to you.
Yeah, but it didn't evolve in this type of environment. I mean, we discussed this earlier. Right? Like, there's no reason for it to be accurate. There's no reason for it to want me to be happy. It could be that the species that survived was the most depressed.
Right.
Didn't necessarily select for anything that we care about.
If you start messing with the system, you don't know what the effects are. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, but to go with the random system is
not the random system. You'll definitely survive. You could look around and get a decent idea about the results that the random system that everyone in the world is using. Yeah. Or you could start tinkering with this system. And
I don't think we're being completely reckless. Like, we're not pioneers who are we're not the first person to ever go into cold water. They're teachers. And there are a lot of people, and you know, we read on Reddit. Or
it's like what I was saying about me going into the sun, and that maybe I was supposed to, I don't know, but right, what if someone who's going to be chronically depressed, is he supposed to just be depressed for the rest of his life?
Yeah. Like, we have, Also, I don't necessarily even like the natural argument anyway, because you could say that whatever we're doing
is natural. Right,
like Wim Hof or meditating, the natural world led to this moment,
right? And to us to seek out that solution to our,
it's the that famous Jewish story.
But it still seems like running, you know, like anyone would say, okay, yeah, so if you're depressed, you should take the medicine, but if you feel good, you shouldn't just take the medicine every day to feel better and better and better.
Yeah.
So same thing, you're administering some kind of medicine to yourself, but you don't know exactly the results of the medicine that you're taking or how much is too much or how much is too little.
Yeah.
And there's no a handbook on how to use all these things.
You definitely have to be careful. I mean, the obvious example is actual substances, right? People who abuse drugs.
Right, is the best example.
That's like so obvious, right? They're self-medicating. They're trying to manipulate the way they feel, and generally it seems they ultimately fail, or they can't get to where they're trying to get.
Right. Yeah, so why is not all attempts doomed to fail just because those are?
I mean, what do we mean by fail? We're using our value system again, and like if you use that same, if you're consistent with our thought process, you could look at people who are successful. Right, doctors will use medicine to engineer certain results. And then if you're going to object to that, you have to object. If you object to me saying that that was a success, you have to object to me saying that the drug addict was a failure. The one who, you know, went manic, depressive, or whatever happened to him.
Maybe that wasn't a failure.
Then you have to say that that's not a failure. And then, okay, so we're back at you know, level zero.
Yes, I've been having that issue.
And I guess you could take the fully Buddhist path, and you can't say that either of them were a failure or a success. There just is. But we can't fully understand what that means. I mean, maybe there's a certain meditative experience that you need to have, or a psychedelic experience.
Once you get adept at manipulating the way that you feel, though, even if we maintain the value system, okay, once you get adept at manipulating, you're naturally going to try to shy away from the negative experiences in favor of the ways that you know how to induce more positive ones, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So what I keep saying is that I think that
you're gonna be too short-term focused.
Yeah.
That's a very practical concern.
You're gonna be short-term focused, and you're gonna avoid the negative things, and you're not gonna. We don't have systems for analyzing the results,
the long-term results.
All these things. Yeah, you don't know. It's very challenging. It seemed very doomed to failure. Like, I don't know how you could ever know.
Yeah. So you have to be careful.
Idiotic. You meditate, and then they ask you how happy you were however long after.
Okay, but if we didn't follow the studies at all, we would still be doing the same thing. Instead, we would be guzzling down sugar to control the short-term way we feel. Like the studies that we trust are only pushing our focus further out, not further in.
A little further
out. We meditate because we're focusing more on the long term, not because in the moment it fires our dopamine centers. We work out because we have this longer health goal. We eat healthy. The studies are doing all of that for us.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they can't see forever into the future, so we're taking a risk. We're stopping. We cut out the sugar. We start exercising. We start meditating because we know that it seems that in 20 years it'll be beneficial. But could it cause some other underlying systemic shift in our brain that's going to be catastrophic? Maybe.
Yeah, or failure to be able to operate in the short term, or hundreds of variables that it seems like it's almost random.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not going to be able to work hard enough, which everyone else is using caffeine all day. So yeah, they're getting addicted to caffeine, but maybe that's what allows them to build a business that ends up returning far more dividends, you know?
Yeah.
And you could be smarter than the system, or yeah. Maybe...
And they gray at 30, they lose all their hair and become depressed.
Yeah, but they have plenty of money. They could get their hair implanted with new hair. Yeah. All they know is that money traditionally will allow them to get value.
Yeah.
If they could get money, then that's...
Yeah, but then I think you see with a lot of them that the money doesn't get them what they're looking for.
Maybe.
I mean, ultimately, I think once they realign, then it's useful to have the money. Because once they know how to get what they're looking
kind
for,
of the
money
debate
is
with
useful.
Sam and Ezra Klein, that Ezra was telling Sam that he's also biased.
Yeah.
Like, what? So, okay, so we have a bias towards whatever things that we think are the things that are worth pursuing. So we'll say that they're worth pursuing.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I like truth. So I just say that pursuing truth is the thing that's worth pursuing in the long term. But these are like historic. These are not new debates. Like, you watch Game of Thrones, and these are all the questions that the characters are asking, that the families are asking, that the archetypes stand in representing. Yeah. You know, and I don't think that there has been an answer about who was right and who wasn't. You know, like these are the historic debates of man. You know, like, so we're taking one of the path. It's the same path as the other path. I don't think it's any greater. But some of the paths have to be better than some.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, whatever. At the end of the day, the path we take is the path we take.
Right.
Right.
So you might as well just say it's the best path.
And from my understanding, we don't even have any control over it in some sense, right?
Right.
It's cause and effect.
Right.
So it really is just the path that we're going to take. The path we take is the path that we're going to take. But the way that our hardware and software or whatever is making those decisions is... based on all these things that we're supposed to care, that we care about, or feel that we care about.
And are, right, the question is, as humanity, are we moving towards like a perfect blending of the archetypes that's,
Yeah. Or maybe we're tests. Maybe some of us are going to fail horribly and we're going to say that doesn't work.
Right. Like video game kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Instead of in the video games,
let's
create
all these different types and see which one and just monitor their levels.
Yeah. Like, we're going to be like, oh, it doesn't work out to spend 8 hours a day
in
Banya.
Yeah.
In Banya. Okay.
This one's defective.
So this one's defective. Put him in a mental institution.
Yeah.
And in the future, no one spends 8 hours a day.
We're definitely wired for the fringe, which is also like, what's so... But it's a fringe, but very big path, which we're learning from the algorithms that know us perfectly.
Yeah, I don't think we're completely in the woods.
No.
With no trail.
Not at all.
There's a smaller footpath.
It's pretty big even. It's bordering on mainstream.
Bordering on mainstream, yeah.
But it's, you know, there are elements of our path that will influence the mainstream.
Yeah, definitely. And our path is influenced by the mainstream.
Very much so. Who said our path is any good?
No one.
I don't think it's good. I would strongly discourage you against it.
It's not a choice. Right. So why don't you get off the path?
So what is our role? To just we're a little ahead on the path where you might be on a similar path. We're all on completely different paths? No, but assuming that there are people that are going to walk a similar path.
Yeah, okay.
We've seen this part of the woods and what maybe we could inform, maybe our experience will inform your turns in some way towards towards different parts
like,
of the woods.
Like, oh, hey, there's water over here in case you were dehydrating. Like, we know the landscape a little.
This landscape, mine is fraught with
with thorns.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Thorns and wild bears and lions.
Yeah, recommend you don't meditate. Anything that I say I do, just say if Morris does it, I don't think I should do it.
Yeah, but it's not that. I don't think it's those things. I think it's like those things are symptomatic of you being you.
Right.
It's not those things that led to this moment. It's who you were that led to this moment. Like, even imagine you could change things. Let's say you didn't go on the meditation retreat and you weren't meditating consistently. I still think at some point you would start, you know, you'd be dealing with some sort of world of depressing questions.
I had these questions from before and now I just have a fancier language and I'm in confrontation with them more frequently.
Yeah. And I think it would come to a point where you had to have this frequent confrontation with them as well. And maybe you'd solve it in a better way. Who knows? Or maybe
this has been much better, maybe.
Yeah, or maybe this has been much better.
At least to have an infrastructure, have a way of confronting them. I would have confronted them alone. Well, it definitely used to feel like I was alone with the questions. I know. There weren't podcasts. I didn't hear anyone talking about them.
Yeah,
I would just have crazy questions.
Yeah,
and I just tell my friends, like, I'd be like crying on the side, like, we all have no free will and it's all meaningless. They'd be like, dude, what are you talking about? You
know? What are you talking about?
Like, I got to Israel and I was just like, there's no meaning in any of this. I was like, what do you mean? There's two things, nature or nurture. All of our things are either from nature or nurture, but no free will. One of those two is causing us to do things. Don't you see? You know, and they were just like,
I'm trying to read this page of whatever book they're studying.
They're like, I'm trying to learn. I'm like, this is learning. You know? And I thought I was the only person for sure that had any of questions about these ideas.
Yeah. And now having this network, this community, it's definitely huge.
Right. So I guess that's the purpose of our podcast, just that you have solidarity.
Yeah. In case you were crying in the corner.
In case you were crying in the corner.
About there being no free will.
About there being free will. Right. You could see that this path.
I'm sure that's true for many of our listeners.
Not true. You don't think it's been true for many of them? No.
No. I mean.
Or it could be people that get like voyeuristic pleasure, or it's like a reminder. See, don't go too deep.
Yeah, like, oh, you don't want to be like that. And that's why they listen.
Yeah, it's like that's the cautionary, cautionary tale. Or maybe they want to just stay track. Maybe we will find gold. Maybe our path really is right.
And they're with us from the
beginning.
Or maybe
they're suffering. Maybe everyone else is suffering similarly with smaller versions and dumber questions.
I think that's true.
That has to be true, right?
I wouldn't say smaller versions. They probably feel like it's just as big, but maybe with dumber questions.
Dumber questions. No, or they can't even get outside of the original question.
Or like, they think we have dumber questions.
I'm hungry. I'm jealous.
No, I don't think that's like a baboon. I'm hungry.
That's it. That's what it is. I'm jealous. I'm not getting enough respect.
No, that's,
he likes her more than.
I'm sure inside their brain things are going on. It can't be just what we see. The same way
the behavior, you could see what they're doing. You could see which direction they try to move in.
So you think if someone sees you, they know what's going on in your head? No,
yeah, they know crazy stuff's going on though. They wouldn't be able to know what's going on though.
Yeah. I'm sure I saw something's going on, but
listen. Yeah, okay, they're very identified with the first level of the wave that hits them, which
they might,
is their regular.
They might think, like, I don't have enough friends, or my relationship's going to shit, or that person doesn't like me as much as I want them
right.
to.
Okay,
and
fine.
They might think that's a smarter question, like, oh, that idiot's thinking about free will in the world. It doesn't matter.
Fine. They're fine. That's a more charitable way of saying it.
Yeah.
They're trying to make the robots that won't, like, suspect that it's all a game, you know? I'm, like, the freak one in Westworld, the one that opens the eyes.
We're the defective robots. Daris,
exactly. Like, they're like, how much intelligence can we give them before it's too much intelligence?
Yeah. Yeah, but people found her fascinating. Humans.
Yes, they, yeah.
Some, not That's everyone why was God scared by her.
God loves me. God loves me, but... He knows that he shouldn't make most of them.
God knows I'm defective, but I'm his favorite.
No, he made some that were like extra. Yeah. And it was curious, you know?
It was curious.
He at least knows who we are.
Yeah.
The other ones, he knows who everyone is. I don't know.
Did you watch all of Westworld the first season?
No.
No, all right, so I won't talk about it. But
should I watch it?
Maybe you could skip a few episodes. I definitely think the last, like, two episodes are have a nice story, nice ending.
Like, now that I'm getting chess lessons, I see all these 2400s, very smart people who probably weren't able to do anything, you know? And it's like, okay, clearly one dial could just be turned up way too high to allow for a successful, you know?
Yeah.
Or for whatever is mainstreamly called success.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case.
Like, there's things that are definitely turned up too high. Like, you could just lower this, like, 10 notches. But who would want that? You would get shut off any of it? You wouldn't shut
it. No, I wouldn't give away any of it. But maybe I would be better off without it.
I would request more.
But that's just our survival instinct, right? Like, we wouldn't commit suicide.
I guess when you do drugs, you're shutting things off. You're begging to be able to feel you're begging how it for feels. An escape. Yeah, like, yeah, oh, yeah. I could shut down your anxiety level. Like, that definitely, I would give up, like, half of my anxiety. And the truth is, if I didn't have my anxiety, I would be nuts. I think I might get exiled. You know?
Yeah.
They'd see me walking down the street completely naked, you know, yelling, yeah, all of this is not, that's like the people that use too much drugs, and they shut off their anxiety.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I think the types of substances we like are the ones that make us think more. Or like caffeine.
I used to like alcohol tons.
Yeah.
I feel like I just know that that's
not good for you.
Not justifiable to use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I think I would love benzos. Are you kidding?
Yeah. I don't know if I would. I mean, obviously in the moment I would, I'm sure it feels great. But afterwards, I don't know if I would. Like, I would say, yes, that was fun, but I don't think I would say I want to do that frequently.
I know. What do you mean, float in the cloud of no anxiety if you could have that permanently?
But you can't.
Right. Okay. So I know that. I know that I can't. I would like any state, but isn't it so weird that we would like any of those states more than the regular state?
Well, those are only the drugs that we're selected for, right? I'm sure they're
Datura, the hellish, the demons cutting off all of your limbs.
Or even just think of something that, like, you eat and makes you sick or throw up. Like, we just don't even know about those things, but poison berries and like.
I used to wonder that if we were always on speed, would we love sobriety? Like, how sublime would we find it? Is it just the contrast that we find pleasurable?
Yeah, if you could step into sobriety without, like, coming into the way we normally come into it with, like, with withdrawal or detox or, like, burnout. Yeah, it would probably be like, wow, how peaceful. Like,
perfect.
How euphoric. Sobriety would be beautiful, yeah.
This is the most perfect state. If I could choose it, I would take it each day, every moment.
But I know I can't.
Yeah. Right? Would that happen? I'm pretty sure it would.
It probably would. But so it's the change of perspective.
We just want change.
Yeah. But certain types of change.
We don't want to be poisoned. When that change, we don't.
I mean, there are people that try to permanently, get a certain feeling. I think we know that's not an option, and so we like to step into different worlds. That's like meditating. We don't meditate all day. You like to step into a different world to give perspective to sobriety.
To give more perspectives. No, but you would want to move permanently into that other world, it seems like.
It seems like, yeah. But that's because it's rare. I have more of this and less of that.
No, dopamine explosion. I guess your receptors would...
Your receptors would
restore it to baseline.
Would adapt, yeah.
Wacky stuff. And really, all of this is just the petrifiedness of death. Is that really what all of it is? Like, from my questions, but also the questions that the dumb person that wonders why he doesn't have enough friends or whatever.
Oh, it's all from survival. Yeah, in a way.
This crazy fear of like, what is the nothingness, you know? And like, I have all these complex ways of saying that I'm afraid of death, and they have their simple ways of saying that they're afraid of death.
No, I wouldn't say that's too literal of an interpretation. Right, we know that evolution could select for features that in the long term don't fully align with survival, or it builds tools of its own that become independent of survival. So like, I wouldn't say that everything we're doing is a fear of death. It was selected for by survival, but now it has its own purpose. But
what is this mystery that I find so enthralling? That sounds like death is the... No. I'm not going to have nothing. Who am I? Everything's going to dissolve. That's all what death is.
But it's not about a fear of death. It's a fear of that. I mean, maybe not that specifically, but like there is some baseline arbitrary construction to your system that's built through randomness and survival and you know.
You just think it's random result of...
It's random and guided. Guided randomness.
Right, towards...
And arbitrary.
Away from death, yeah. But arbitrary.
Yeah, away from death, but in an arbitrary direction.
Right.
And sometimes it does end up leading back to death, right? You have people who commit suicide.
Right, which is a major glitch.
There's just, at your base is now an algorithm with an arbitrary objective function. Your goal is whatever it is. Or really, you have multiple goals that are weighted differently.
Right. And survival has the history of being the strongest and longest standing one, but...
No, survival is what shaped all of our goals. It might not even be a goal within ourselves.
Right, they're all family tree goals under survival that generally that correlated with survival. Yeah. So you said, okay, let me move towards these 8 pillars of survival. These 2, this one, yeah. That was 8, that was 10, that was... Yeah.
And you could build a hypothetical world where like...
And then you have an affinity for one of them because it... If your wiring kind of messed it up that it gave it too much of a weight.
Yeah, or in the past it needed to have more of a weight, right?
Right.
Oh, reproducing, having sex has more of a weight than getting a massage, which loosens your muscles, has some utility, but less of a weight because it's you know, has less of an impact on survival.
Right.
And then you come into a monogamous, did I say the word right? It sounds strange on my tongue. Monogamous, that second M sounds strange on my lips, I guess.
Monogamous.
Anyways, you end up in a monogamous society and now your weights are
way off. Are you're way too off. Much of the sex wiring.
Yeah.
You need much less of it, but you just have it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not that you have survive wiring, you have sex wiring specifically for that.
Right. It made it because it was strong but survive, but now it has its own a life of its own.
So I wouldn't say that our depression or whatever is a fear of death.
But that all stemmed from
it was death. Shaped through death.
It was related to death.
Death was a shaping force on it.
The force that from which all of it stemmed.
Yeah. Well, the inverse of death really was the force. But
fine. But then that's crazy that all these are real. Really confrontation with death.
I still don't know if I would say
death's
that.
Death's many cronies, whoever his sons, it's death's sons, or the opposite of death's children that you're in conflict with.
Yeah, we're God's children. In a way, God, if God is life.
He's a life. So we're clinging towards God. We want all...
We're the ones that were selected for life. So these are God's questions. They're prophecies.
The questions of life. Crazy. That sounds much more pleasant, though. Than moving towards death.
I think you're just trying to force it because of your depression.
The God of life. I haven't been so depressed. I've just been...
We're death's children. And then I give a whole explanation why that's wrong. And we come back to death's children.
I don't understand your explanation. Why? No, because you said that all of them... are things that spawned from it. So I said, his children. We're not his. We're in it. So how is that wrong? So I said, okay, it's not with death directly.
But we're the one that...
his children.
Yeah, but... And then the inverse of death's children.
I could have called that God or life. Fine.
Yeah.
What, but you're in interaction with you're craving all of these life related children of life, of whatever you associated with life.
Yeah. Everything is okay. This has some weight on how good it for is for us. We have to weigh all the decisions, weigh all the options, right? They're running through our wires. And okay, this has X weight. This has whatever weight. I mean, it's still strange that we do so consciously.
Yeah. We've gone in circles for episodes / for life, which we really started on the first episode, Lost Somewhere. And I guess it's what Sam always says, we have a navigational issue.
We have somewhat of a navigational issue.
Yeah, right? He always says that. No, and what we have is a navigational issue. It's like part of the passionate pitch about why well-being is a good North Star that we should march towards.
Yeah.
What is causing us to repeatedly find ourselves lost?
It's probably some of what we touched on earlier. We're not designed, if you're going to, you know, view evolution as the designing force, we're not designed to think about these sort of questions. This is not what we're optimized for. We're not even designed necessarily to see reality as reality. We're designed to see a fraction of reality, a segment of it that's useful for us to see, or maybe even create fictions over reality that are useful for us.
So we're accidentally stumbling upon truths and asking questions about the who made us kind of things, and those questions, that's what they used to tell me when I was a little kid, when I'd ask, like, well, who made Hashem then? They'd be like, there's some questions that you shouldn't ask. I was like, right away, that's the question I must ask. So maybe they were right all along.
Yeah.
There's no value in asking these questions. Yeah, but there's no truth at that, especially if you're assuming that we're the product of some kind of non-intelligent design, which is, you know, then there's nothing that lies at the end of it. I guess understanding that it's flawed could help you potentially.
Yeah. But I also think it's interesting that we might be able to have the opportunity to change that in some way, right? We won't be able to see all of reality, but with some of our studies, we're able to see parts of reality that we're not supposed to see, right? Like there, you could study physics and quantum physics, and like there, this fraction of reality that it's so strange that we see it there because we didn't evolve to see it, and yet it's there in some sense. I mean, and maybe it's only there in our perception. Our perception that we developed accidentally created these laws of physics, but it seems that we're able in some way to somewhat break out of what we were intended to see.
Like chinks in the armor.
Yeah. And we're going to have, you know, even more options in the future. We're going to be able to change our body structure, and we're going to be able to change our brain structure. And maybe we'll be able to create alternative forms of intelligence. So I do think that we could somewhat break out and see what's behind the curtains.
And is it good? Will it bring any good?
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe reality, maybe we'd live in hell and we just built this perception to shelter us. Who knows?
Right, we're tortured every day, and this is all. And it's crazy how you see the stories hitting on all these pieces. You know, the people finding out the secrets they weren't supposed to find out. Like this human notion that there's something that we're tapping up against that's either like a jewel that's going to bring like euphoria, or that's something that we're not supposed to be looking at.
Or just nothing. It's just more randomness. That's probably the most likely. It's just more arbitrary things behind it. Behind the curtain is another curtain.
Yeah.
And another one and another one. It's funny. I had a dream about that once.
Really?
Yeah, I was going years and years ago, and I only remember it, well, because the ending is strange. But I was going through these doors, and it was a long, narrow hallway, just door after door after door. Going through them, I mean, it did eventually take me somewhere. We were fighting Darth Maul or something. We were Jedi.
Yeah,
you were in it. I was a child.
He was at the end.
I think
of it.
You were like Qui-Gon, and I was Obi-Wan.
Nice.
And you may have died.
I died.
I don't know. But anyway, in the fight, my finger got chopped off, And I woke up with a cut on my pinky finger right where it got chopped off.
That's scary.
I mean, it's the reverse. It's my finger got cut, and so I dreamed that it got chopped off.
And it ties in with the dreams in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were more doors, but they all led to the Sith at the end.
Yeah, then they all led to the Sith. But we were able to defeat him.
So we needed to access him so that we could defeat him. And then, well, I died. There was a casualty was a of casual. Defeating the Sith. And what good did it bring to kill the Sith? He was behind 400 doors. If we didn't go look for him, there would have been no need for me to die. He was clearly locked up. Yeah, that's like Harry Potter, right? The guy saves the Sorcerer's Stone. It's like, no, he didn't.
He endangered it.
Went and got the stone. It was safely
safe in the mirror where no one could access yeah, it.
Exactly. Stupid meddling kids. What's that from?
Yeah.
And it would have been safe if not for you meddling a Scooby-Doo.
They say that.
Yeah, but he would have gotten away with the crime, so.
Fine. So they did do some good there.
They were good.
No, but truthfully, no one would have known that Voldemort was in Quirrell and Harry defeated him.
I would have had more time to buy. The Sorcerer's Stone was a small play. Yeah,
Quirrell would have figured out, okay, I can't get the stone, and he would have retreated safely back into his disguise. Yeah,
what do you think Maul would have done behind the curtains? He would have procreated, bred 100 more Darth Mauls.
Yeah. He was built, actually, by the way, in my dream, I left out a detail. He did have some sort of army. Not people. They were like these little like ant figures. Behind all the doors was the entrance to our basement. Somehow on the side, tucked away on the side. And there were these little ant guys, colors, bright colors, like red, green, blue, coming up the stairs.
I see, so they were
But
breeding.
They were like tiny little minions that were easy to kill, but there were just tons of them.
It's always in the basement, right?
Yeah, it's always
the cellar
in the
of our unconscious or something.
No sunlight.
No sunlight, right? We're the Lord of Light.
No window, yeah.
Yeah, darkness.
That's the only thing that makes the basement unique.
Our stories are crazy because they really, this is what's going on. That's why everyone knows about it. That's why the stories resonate.
Yeah.
Everyone somewhat knows about what's going on, about this madness.
Yeah, and it's not just the stories. It's all of the art, music.
Everything's about the questions.
Yeah.
Death. Death and his children.
Yeah, we're all Death's child.
No, we're in confrontation with Jet, but in that case, right, we're the children of life.
Yeah. I mean, we are life now.
Temporarily.
Yeah, and then we'll have our children who are life.
We're going to get to die eventually anyway, so I guess we'll see what that's like.
Yeah, or we won't see what it's like because we'll be dead.
And then it's over, that's it. It doesn't make sense. I don't like it. I don't know if those are synonyms. It doesn't make sense. I don't like it.
Yeah, they can be synonyms if you want them to be. Oh, that was an interesting thought.
I don't like it, therefore it doesn't make sense. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I was gonna go on a tangent. God and his children, and it reminds me of all, like, all the pagan ideologies, and almost all of them, the gods are the children of God, and they kill their parents.
A lot of them, they kill the god, you're saying?
Yeah, like the Greek gods were the children of, or yeah, the Greek gods were the children of, I don't remember his name, Kronos, maybe? I don't know, some god who's cast as evil, because the Greeks are telling the stories, and the children then cut him up and like locked him away forever in pieces.
Like his making us was a huge curse?
I don't know why they killed him. No, they just didn't. I think they wanted to rule. They didn't like his rule. But he also, I think, might have killed his father. So that there seems to be this story of God's children killing God and becoming the new gods.
Right, like Oedipus kind of thing.
Yeah.
It has to be intelligent design or at least benevolent design or something like that, which I guess is the synonym.
Well, evolution is some sort of intelligent force, right? It's selecting
right,
for
it's
something.
It's not random.
It's not true randomness. True randomness. It's
selecting for life. So yeah. The children of life.
Yeah.
It's a good episode name.
Yeah, the children of life. It is a good one.
maybe we should learn more evolutionary psychology. It's a crazy thing. That's the crazy theory. It's basically saying that that's why they're really against evolution, because it's basically saying that God is life.
Yeah.
And everything else is an unintended consequence of the pursuit of the God of life.
No, but you could paint it all in a way that's not bad for them. Like, someone caused the start of the sequence, and if we really say it's all cause and effect, then it's, to God, it's not really a sequential video. It's all one picture. He's outside of time in a way.
Right.
To him, there's just all of existence ever at once.
Right, maybe this was just one test. What would happen if life is God? What would happen if pleasure is God?
Yeah.
What would happen if...
Well, this is the only one that goes somewhere, because if pleasure was God, you'd probably never end up with life in the first place. Right? This is the only one that works, and that's why it's here. It was selected for, right? Even survival of the fittest, in a way, was selected for by survival.
Right, there were other methods on survival.
There are other possible methods in the abstract space of possibilities. They just never manifested.
This is the only thing that breeds life. Yeah, well, is life good or is life bad? That's that other guy.
Yeah.
If life's bad, then this is the most evil of all.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what birth does.
Your perception of if life is good or bad is basically your perception if God is good or bad. So I guess the people that say that God is good... people that are arguing that life is good.
Yeah. What about the people that personify God as this weird figure that gets angry and cares that you do specific rituals?
Yeah, he does. He gets angry and gives you death if you don't follow the rules of the life.
So those people are probably the most enlightened. They think God is human because they're human.
And because they're products. They're children of the God, so they can know whatever is in them is whatever was in life.
Yeah, so it's interesting. There was a quote that stuck with me. Man created God in his image. But if you take the broader view, right, so that's a play on God creating man in his image, but really they're both true. Right? They're one and the same in a way.
Right, man created God in his image, or God created man in his image.
Man created God in his image. Man was a product of this force of life, which we're calling God.
Right.
Which was so we were shaped by life, and then we created something else in our image of life, if that makes sense.
What did we create?
Our understanding of God is shaped based off of our understanding of the world. Based off of our understanding of ourselves, which was shaped by the world.
But we don't only care about life. So that's the craziest part, that maybe one day we decide that life was the... Even though life spawned us to shun life.
Yeah. I said this before, but you have individuals who commit suicide.
Right. Is that rejecting God? Rejecting life?
No.
God was life.
Yeah.
But one of his children... Oh, one of his children... pleasure, kindness, whatever it was, took over his empire convinced us that we should move towards him.
So I guess if you view the different things that we put weights on, as we were saying before, as the children of God, the children of life, the different objectives that we have, that were created to promote life, and then they turn on life in a way.
Right, and they say, give away your goods to someone else because that'll make you have meaning, which is more important than life.
Yeah.
And maybe what God is one means that it's all is the same. You can't move towards one without moving towards the other. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah. Or maybe even in killing yourself, that's still...
Maybe, because we are all one. So even your individual story... which may play towards one of the individual deity, children of the deities, it's still done in service of the one.
Yeah, because they're representations of the one. They're different faces.
Right, the many-faced God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorite references to God in the book, the many-faced God. Like, the seven, okay, that's pretty weak. Like, just the name, their title.
What are the seven?
They're the southern gods in Westeros.
I know, but who are, which is one, kindness?
The mother, they represent traits. The mother, the father, There are three men, three women, and one.
Oh, so that's monotheistic, the many faced God.
Yeah.
Because they are really all one with many faces and not only seven faces.
Yeah. Is the many faced God, though, is like a, isn't it a variant of the same religion? Like, it's different. I think they're different sects.
I don't know. In the show, it's different. They're all in the temple with the heads. I don't know if that was in
Yeah. So they're not necessarily the seven. They draw from it. I still think they have some of the figures in there. But the many faced God is different. So the many faced God is God is everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
we are so, all faces of God.
So polytheistic that it becomes monotheism. We're all faces of
and
God.
And it's also Valamog, what, all men must die.
Yeah, Valamog Malkules.
So what does that have to do with all men must die? See, so their life, death, something.
We're just temporary. Anicca.
Yeah. But it's it, and that's the many faced. Yeah. We die and we become one of the faces of God.
This face is just temporary. We die and
take on a new face. Our face is one of the faces of God.
Yeah. Yeah. They take our face.
So we are God, is the point. You are one of the things of life.
Yeah.
And really, it's all one. All right. We took it somewhere interesting, further into the forest.
Yeah. Did we find a clearing? Maybe a sunny little clearing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's sunnier than where it was.
Yeah, we're the children of life.
We're the children of life. One of the faces of the many-faced God.
And thank you for joining us for another episode of
Cold Plunge. Oh.